from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Nobody promises you a rose garden at work. We like to think of those who get ahead as talented, committed, inspiring team players. But there is another way, another set of traits. Psychologists call it the dark triad. The colleague who is narcissistic, antisocial, and manipulative, and rises. This hour On Point, the dark triad at work. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is this person succeeding in your office? Does it take some narcissism, some manipulation to get to the top, get ahead? Is there a better way? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon, is Sue Schellenberger, work and family columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Earlier this month, she wrote What Corporate Climbers Can Teach Us, and it went to the dark triad. Sue, welcome back to On Point. Nice to talk to you again.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
And from Vestal, New York, Seth Spain joins us, professor of organizational behavior at Binghamton University. He's the lead author on the 2014 research review, The Dark Side of Personality at Work. Seth Spain, welcome. Wonderful to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Sue, you pulled the lid off of this can. I had never really thought a lot about it. Seth, you're all over it. I mean, you're pointing at how the dark side of personality in the workplace is getting more attention, popular attention. Looking at these books that have come out in recent years, Snakes in Suits When Psychopaths Go to Work, and A First-Rate Madness, Uncovering the Links Between Leadership and Mental Illness. You jump right into it with this dark triad, calling it deviant, aberrant, toxic. Seth, what is going on? People go to work. Some people rise. They rise in different ways. Do we suddenly have a problem with the dark triad in our workplaces?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily something that we suddenly have a problem with, but because forever, there's always been just a few ways to be good, but there are a lot of different ways to be bad, and some of them have been pretty effective. My colleague, co-author on the paper, Peter Harms of the University of Nebraska, likes to remind us what Mae West said, which is, when I'm good, but when I'm bad, I'm great. So people who have these characteristics, they are motivated to elevate themselves and somewhat to harm others, or at least to get things over on others. So it can be effective to get ahead quickly.
So here you are in the popular press, and you looked at all these kinds of issues for years, and here's your headline, What Corporate Climbers Can Teach Us. Are you telling us that everybody who climbs is some kind of deviant, aberrant, toxic mess? Sue, surely not.
No, surely not. It's interesting, though. They are no doubt a small minority of the workplace, and the story idea came up because we were puzzling. One of my colleagues, Adam Thompson, one of the editors, said, you know, we've all seen this type in the workplace, and we all wonder, how does he or she do it? So there's a minority of people who get ahead without seeming to have the talent, skill, hardworking qualities that we think are needed to get ahead. And they are especially interesting because they do have this dark side quality of kind of a short-term orientation, more focused on themselves than others, willing to do whatever it takes to get what they want, usually in the short term.
So, Seth, you've really gone deep on this, and you've got these three pieces, the dark triad. I had no idea there was so much kind of established lingo in psychology. This is a well-known term, the dark triad. It's not just like it wasn't born yesterday. You got narcissism, and I mean, you can go on Wikipedia and find the dark triad. Narcissism, grandiosity, pride, egotism, lack of empathy, Machiavellianism, characterized by manipulation and exploitation of others, disregard for morality, self-interest, deception, this antisocial piece, or just plain up psychopathy, antisocial behavior, impulsivity, selfishness, callousness, remorselessness. Is this a well-known, do these things go together somehow, Seth? They show up in threes?
Generally, these traits do kind of, they tend to come together. Like if you're high on one, there's a good chance that you're at least higher than average on one or two of the others, because they have this sort of like socially noxious core, this motivation to get ahead, sort of whatever the cost. So it's certainly not uncommon for people who have one of these characteristics to have at least one of the other two.
And what's the point you're making in research? You point out people can have these three together, narcissism, this antisocial behavior, manipulative character. What's the point you're making about how they operate, rise, fall at work?
Well, the thing that – this all goes back to research that I did with Peter Harms and Sean Hanna in the Leadership Quarterly a few years ago, where we were looking at the development of leadership in West Point cadets over a period of 3 years. Okay. And we expected all of these dark characteristics. We actually looked at 11 of them, of which the dark triad was a subset. We expected them all to be bad, right, that they would harm their leader development over time. But what we found out was that – narcissism was actually pretty – it looked somewhat beneficial and certainly didn't have any negative
beneficial for what or whom?
These cadets were rated by their peers, by their cadet subordinates and their cadet superiors on several dimensions of leadership performance.
So in assessing them individually in their performance, it wasn't a problem. Why do you think their peers – saw the narcissists as admirable or saw that as a plus?
Well, we're looking at they were rated on their leadership behaviors, so things that they were actually doing. So their peers weren't necessarily looking at them as like and thinking about them as narcissists. What we were seeing is the cadets rated themselves on their narcissism, and we thought that it's sort of a kind of Napoleon sort of thing. That Napoleon wasn't necessarily a great student, but that he wanted to be the best. Once he decided that he wanted to be the best general, the greatest general in history, he became a voracious reader of military history, of tactics, of strategy. And so we think narcissists in particular, once they're motivated to do something, when it's become self-relevant, that motive to become the best, to be recognized as special or superior really takes over, and they'll do what it takes to improve.
So what do you take from that? Here, the West Point cadets' peers looked at narcissists by their own evaluation and said, hey, good leader.
Yeah. Well, we were surprised by that. Like I said, we thought all of these were going to be bad. So we started to think maybe there are upsides to these. Maybe because of the motivation profile or something like that, that in general the dark side traits might have hidden silver linings, at least for the individual. And so this motivated the research review where we just wanted to grab all of the published and unpublished literature that we could get our hands on, try to put together sort of a bit of a taxonomy of when there are good outcomes for bad traits in addition to the much, much more well-studied bad outcomes of bad traits.
So Schellenberger, in this era when everyone's talking for years now about flattened hierarchies and team players, these traits can sound pretty noxious, but in your piece, you've got dark side and silver lining for each of them, starting with narcissism.
That's right. And in the short term, the manipulative person may be very good at forming alliances, may be a good negotiator, may stand out on the team for being willing to just dive in and wrestle with those tough problems. And even the antisocial person can be a fairly creative thinker, and maybe in that team meeting will push the limits and come up with some kind of a new idea. And as Seth says, all of these things can really be a benefit in the short term and make you look pretty good to your colleagues. The thing that undermines that, of course, over time is that you find out that these traits are not contributors to good long-term team performance. You know, you can't really trust that person when you turn your back on him or her.
Let's get our callers in here. People have a lot of experience with what goes on in the workplace. Charlottesville, Virginia, Catalina is calling. Hi, Catalina. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What have you seen?
I'm calling because I have a question for the guests on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I work in a highly technical field. And generally, the people that get promoted are very technically skilled, but don't necessarily have the best people skills. So my question would be, how much do the experts believe these choices that we're essentially saying make people not necessarily the best people? Are these conscious choices that they're making, or is it a lack of social awareness that's resulting in these essentially harmful behaviors?
That's a great question. Seth, deliberate or just an expression of what they are?
We tend to think of these things, these sort of motivational or personality characteristics, as being largely habit-driven. They're sort of your typical way of interacting with the world. So for a lot of people, it's probably not too conscious. But my thought is for people who aren't consciously doing things or who aren't reflecting on their behaviors, they're probably not going to be the most effective at it. And it's going to be the people who are who have these characteristics, who are motivated to do these things, but are also thinking about the world, who are aware of their place in it, and are skilled in using their behaviors to express these traits, who are actually going to be effective. So the ones who are going to show, sort of those short-term but impressive people skills.
Sue Schellenberger, you've paid a lot of attention to these issues for a long time. What's your assessment? What portion of those who get ahead, bosses, leaders in workplaces, are you perceiving or suggesting have this dark triad of narcissism, antisocial behavior, Machiavellianism?
I think it's a very small proportion. And I think to Catalina's point, she's asking, you know, these tech people deliberately sort of not good with people. The fields where, for example, Machiavellianism may be more common include politics, law, and sales, where people can deliberately, as Seth says, use these skills, the narcissism, the looking good, the negotiating, to look really good to other people. And people from upper social classes, too, can be very good at manipulation because they're skilled at it. The more skillful they are, the better. And so I think to the extent that you're conscious, you develop those dark side skills and you rise more quickly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about narcissistic, antisocial, manipulative colleagues at work and how they get ahead, become bosses, become players. Psychologists call it the dark triad, and it works to a point. Sue Schellenberger is with us from the Wall Street Journal, work and family columnist there. She wrote about this recently in her column, headlined, "What Corporate Climbers Can Teach Us, Dark Personality Traits Can Help People Rise Through the Ranks." Seth Spain has done a bunch of the research that Sue was looking at as she wrote that. He's professor of organizational behavior in the School of Management at Binghamton University, State University of New York. Lead author on the research piece, "The Dark Side of Personality at Work." And can you find it in the popular culture? All over the place. Netflix series House of Cards, House Majority Whip Frank Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey, explains what it takes to be successful in his business, politics.
For those of us climbing to the top of the food chain, there can be no mercy. There is but one rule. Hunt or be hunted.
Antisocial? I guess. There are other ways. 2010 film Social Network, Mark Zuckerberg, played by Jesse Eisenberg, wrestles for full control of Facebook. Here he is responding to a lawyer who asks if he's paying attention.
You have part of my attention. You have the minimum amount. The rest of my attention is back at the offices of Facebook, where my colleagues and I are doing things that no one in this room, including and especially your clients, are intellectually or creatively capable of doing. Did I adequately answer your condescending question?
Back off. And there's a humorous version as well. 30 Rock, Jack Donaghy, played by Alec Baldwin. Talk about lack of empathy or unencumbered by empathy. He's the big cheese. Here he shows Liz Lemon, played by Tina Fey, how easy it is to fire people.
Fire her. And don't ever make me talk to a woman that old again.
I can't fire Rosemary.
Yes, you can. It's easy. Observe. Jonathan, you're fired.
What? No! What? No! No, I won't fire her. It's mean.
but he does without batting an eye. Narcissism, antisocial behavior, Machiavellianism, the dark triad. Josh in Atlanta, Georgia. Josh, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So it's a very fascinating topic. I'm in school for business out here at Georgia State, and it's funny. I just took a test on organizational behavior today, and when you're reading like the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey and all these guys say, to be effective in the workplace, you have to have a positive attitude, work well with others, all that good stuff. And then you guys come out with the dark triad stuff. I think in the short term, y'all kind of keyed on it. It makes sense, if you want to work yourself up and get there. But in the long term, is that really something that's going to benefit the organization as a whole? Or is it being that self-centered, selfish kind of stuff? It's only going to affect you and then, ultimately be your own demise.
Sort of burn itself out or burn your own bridge. As you go, Sue, how do you think about that? I mean, it's true, the Seven Habits, it's all about positive stuff. Maybe some of them would relate here as well. if these are ultimately negative, as Josh suggests, in Atlanta, why don't managers recognize that early on and say, you know what, yeah, there's a shine on that apple, but it doesn't look like a good apple?
When you see these traits at work, they shine and these people tend to be quickly promoted before the long-term consequences of the dark side become clear. And in some organizations, they can move up very quickly. And as they get into the rarefied realm of the executive suite, they're less surrounded by others and maybe they can survive longer there. There's a lot of research on that. It's an attractive theory. But I do think Josh is right. I think in the long term, at the best managed organizations, you'll find people who are looking at the long term so that they keep people around them who can do the job so that they build teams. And I think these dark side people get an undue amount of attention because they kind of are like comets flashing through the sky and burning out.
Seth, but here's a listener, HLB, who writes to us quoting George Bernard Shaw, where Shaw writes, "All progress depends on the unreasonable man." A suggestion there that, you know what, it may not be pretty, but progress depends on the unreasonable man. Maybe even in your psychological view, the psychopath.
Well, in general, the people who show these traits, especially psychopaths, you know, historically they've been really important to us. Peter Jonasson at the University of Western Sydney points out that, you know, these are the people who were leading us in tribal warfare, you know, when back in our hunter-gatherer days. And they still are important for those sort of settings. So it's important for organizations to be able to manage their bad behavior while taking advantage of their sort of their brashness, their forward self-propelling momentum. But for most people, I mean, to respond to our business students out there, there's a reason we don't tend to teach people to do this because for most people, it doesn't work. For most people, going out there and doing solid work and building positive relationships are what's going to not only get you ahead in the long run, keep you there, and keep your organizations functioning. Most people who have dark side traits, unless they're incredibly skilled, are going to burn out. They're going to derail in their careers eventually.
Doriana in Jamestown, Rhode Island. Doriana, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Oh, hi.
I'm calling because I have a family member who is a classic sociopath. He's very narcissistic and also very smart, very clever, graduate of Harvard University.
I hope he's not in your family business then, Doriana.
Well, he's not in my family business, but there is a family business going on that I do not have a part in. But he somehow, he's failed in every personal attempt of his own personal businesses, of several of which he's tried to do. And consequently, he's become part of this family business where they have gone overseas and have bought property and tried to build up, and it's still going on in South America. And anyway, my point is that...
How's it all working out if he's your dark triad guy?
He goes back and forth. He's sort of one of the representatives for the family, and I think it's working out as far as the country's economy is failing. So I think that has a lot to do with how well it works out or not in the end. But as far as he is concerned, he's just very good at fooling members of the family and manipulating them to think that he's really a good person to be in charge. And he's entered as a significant player because of his ability to manipulate. But we could see right through him, and a part of our family can see right through him, yet there's nothing we can do because the members who are part of this kind of a triangle really believe, I mean, he's so clever and so manipulative that they really believe they're in good hands with this person. And when I heard your program, I just thought, wow, this is like...
Bingo.
Bingo, exactly.
Yeah, Doriana, thank you for your call. Seth, how does this tend to play out? When does the light shine through and illuminate the dark? When do people say, oh, wait a minute, something's off here?
Well, in some cases, this could be, it could be something where just over time, because particularly narcissists, but Machiavellian psychopaths tend to poison their personal relationships over time. It's sort of a slow burn to watch this this unfold. But other times when people have been, say, promoted quickly because of these characteristics, it might be a spectacular burnout that you see. And it sounds like unless you can do something to really expose the nasty behavior that this person is doing to those who have decision-making power, it sounds like the only way they're going to see it is some sort of a spectacular failure.
So it's worth looking a little more closely at these again. Seth was just pointing to the manipulative part, the Machiavellian part, and you write about this. I mean, up front, this person can, they enjoy testing limits as part of their sort of profile. There can be some pretty attractive elements in that Machiavellian charisma, forceful negotiator.
And it's frustrating for people like Doriana who see through this. I think one thing that's very helpful is to know what separates the dark side folks from others. And one thing is their their motive. They want to win at others' expense. And their method, you know, they're willing to pursue their desired outcomes regardless of the cost. They'll use inaccurate information, they'll deceive people, and they do tend to take a short-term view. And to know this, I think, might be helpful to Doriana as she watches the behavior of this family member, and maybe to just ask others, you know, what are you seeing there about true method, true motive? You know, what's really driving this person? And that may help open others' eyes to it.
How about on the antisocial thing? It's hard to see exactly how that would have a positive up front.
Well, it really is. And I think that those people can also be manipulative often, and they are creative, and they will manipulate others to get into these positions where they can have their own way. And the thing that exposes them, I think, the most sharply is a complete lack of regard for others, which tends to show up fairly quickly.
But again, maybe there's a baked-in value here. As our listener, quoting George Bernard Shaw, said, you know, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. There's creativity. You write there's a silver lining of creativity, of testing limits. I mean, Steve Jobs was kind of famously antisocial, built a pretty significant company.
There absolutely is. And to build something new is very hard. And it takes sometimes, you know, part of a dark side of you to disregard other concerns, to set aside people's emotions, to drive through for a goal. And I think that, you know, that is something that the dark side traits can be helpful with. That's part of the silver lining. The magic, though, of doing that in a healthy way is then being able to turn around and pull your team up with you and to really think about others as you're doing it and to, you know, set aside your own narcissistic goals.
We've got listeners online responding here on Facebook. We asked if people recognize dark traits and that helps some people advance professionally. And Jubel says, is that a rhetorical question? She writes, that, of course, that's generally the rule in politics, capitalism, religion. Knock enough people down so you can climb to the top of the pile of bodies and reach your goal. Rare is the person who does not use these tactics. What do you say, Seth?
I don't know if it's – I would say it's rare. Well, I think probably almost everybody uses some of these tactics sometimes just because, you know, when we're in the dark, we might often use some of our less savory approaches to life. But most people are pretty decent, more or less. We're not all out for ourselves, but sometimes the most visible elements of our society are. On the flip side, though, when we look at this, if there's something in the culture that's broken or bad, it's often the people who are extremely disagreeable, who are antisocial, who are these risk takers, who point it out and try to resist it. So we can have some additional benefits, even if it's. Few and far between.
Matthew in Owensboro, Kentucky. Matthew, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My name is Matthew Hardy, and I think narcissism, I think that's looked at as a very negative aspect, and I think part of it is a little bit of jealousy and that might sound like narcissistic itself. But,
like, and we got your full name, Matthew.
Matthew Hardy.
Yeah, no, we got it.
So what do you think
is going on? You think it's just people are just jealous of the narcissist with that fulsome self-image?
Yeah, I think that's at least part of it. I think that if people are more productive, people don't trust them per se, and I think it's like a lack of trust, and people just view it as an inequality and feel like they have to go on the offense and kind of attack them and try to, like, undermine them in a different way. It's just a different perspective, different way to look at it.
Yeah. No, Matthew, I appreciate your call. Matthew Hardy. Sue, how about it? I mean, you point out narcissism, and so does Seth. It can drive people to actually work hard and really put the effort in to be a top performer.
It absolutely can. And as Seth points out, context is so important in this case. If Matthew had seen Sunbeam, for example, Sunbeam Corporation being managed by Chainsaw Al Dunlap a couple of decades ago, he looked like a genius. You know, the ultimate narcissist, the ultimate Machiavellian, just, you know, boasted over how many people he cut from the payroll, looked like a brilliant leader and was just raved about in the business press. And it turned out that it was all fraudulent. The company fell apart and the books were cooked. And it was the context that enabled him to look so good. And if he had walked into another kind of company with healthy yardsticks where we're really measuring output and team relationships rather than, you know, how brash and bold you look, he would have looked like a fool. So much depends on the yardsticks in place at your company or your organization.
Seth, a couple of listeners point out that if you spot this and call it out, you may better watch out. Dave writes to us. He says, yes, I've seen this several times. They are scary people, and if they sense someone opposing them, they lash out. Virginia writes, I've spent much of my adult life, a whole career actually, working with among four people who have these characteristics. I'm getting stomach pains just recalling one such in particular. What about the process of surfacing this and addressing it, Seth?
That's probably, I mean, for individuals, especially, say, if you're the subordinate for someone who has these characteristics, it's going to be really hard because, you know, they are, a Machiavellian is scanning for threats and going to try to control them. So you've got to be careful in this. Again, it's the sometimes you might, your best bet is probably to start to use the Machiavellian's own tools against them to try to form alliances with other people who notice the behavior. Use code, keep it quiet, but look for other people who notice the same behavior and try to be able to expose it, try to show to others in the organization what the problem is, especially in a lot of cases, you know, there's going to be at least some bullying that goes along with this, and that's painful for everyone, the victims of it, as well as anyone who witnesses it, who will then be afraid of becoming a victim themselves or what the consequences would be of exposing it. But these are the cases where these people are bad, as we pointed out already, are oftentimes bad apples. They can poison, they can spoil the bunch, and you can't stand by. I think they will make the environment toxic if given enough time. You need to try to take some kind of steps to shut it down.
Sue Schellenberger, get a little Machiavellian to take on a Machiavellian. Pretty soon it sounds like a real snake pit in there.
I think it's hard to manage up, but if your friends are close, make your enemies closer. If you have such a boss, increase your communication with that person and ask for, you know, true accountability on what they expect of you, and also find allies even higher up, maybe two layers up.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about narcissistic, antisocial, manipulative colleagues at work and how they get ahead, become bosses, become players. Psychologists call it the dark triad and say it works to a point. You can see all kinds of examples, like and unlike in the media. Wolf of Wall Street last year, 2013, Jordan Belfort, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, rises to wealth as a corrupt stockbroker. Here he's kind of inspiring everybody down that road. Hunt or be hunted. Inspirational speech he's telling his brokers, you're competing against one another.
I want you to take a good look at the person next to you. Go on. Because sometime in the not-so-distant future, you're going to be pulling up to a red light, and you beat up old, you know? And that person's going to be pulling up right alongside you in that brand-new Porsche.
Yeah, so who is it going to be, you or them? But there's the nice guy, too, in the television comedy The Office. Michael Scott, played by Steve Carell, cares deeply about his employees liking. Here he's talking about an interaction he just had with his employee, Dwight.
I told Dwight that there is honor in losing, which, as we all know, is completely ridiculous. But there is, however, honor in making a loser feel better, which is what I just did for Dwight. Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Okay, try that one on for size. Sue Schellenbarger is with us, does the Work and Family column for the Wall Street Journal, with us from KLCC in Eugene, Oregon today. Seth Spain is here from Binghamton University, New York. He's a lead author on the 2014 research review, The Dark Side of Personality at Work. I want to bring Nancy Kane in right here, historian, professor of business administration at Harvard Business School, great eye on the big world. Nancy, thank you very much for being with us.
Real pleasure, Tom.
Okay, here's a couple of responses online as we speak. Vicky says, today's corporate structure and shareholder demands reward the dark side and punish empathy and respect. That's her view of the world, but here's another listener says, hey, playing patty cake is for children and caregivers. It has no place in leadership, so to bring on the bad guy. Nancy, what do you see in the real world? What works, what doesn't, and what dominates?
So a couple of comments. One as a historian, one as a scholar of leadership. Mm-hmm. I think what Sue said earlier is really important. The context matters tremendously. So there aren't very many terrifically accomplished people of great impact that don't have a healthy slug of narcissism. That's part of what drives them. That's part of what, you know, makes them take risks that others might not take. So in some sense, that's been with us for a long, long time. That's true of leaders. But at the same time, right, you know, it's married, as Sue and Seth know very, very well from their different, you know, work in this field. You know, the importance of empathy and relating to people in effective ways that have trustworthiness built into them. You can't really lead people for a long, long time on anything that's hard and worthy if they don't trust you. And people have very, very good filters. They have very good antennae on all these kind of traits, which is why you're getting such great responses from people on the phone and on Facebook and by email, because everyone knows this combination of traits, or as Seth said so well, these habits that go in this very interesting cluster that he and Professor Harms and their colleague have identified so well.
So Nancy, when you hear him calling out this dark triad, narcissism, antisocial behavior, that is low empathy, Machiavellianism, manipulative, are you thinking, hey, get over it? This is just...
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm not thinking that at all. In fact, I'm thinking that this cluster of habits, right, and how the way they have propelled people through, and, you know, including people like Steve Jobs, like Kenneth Lay, and Jeff Skilling, by the way, who fit this profile very, very well, that they have propelled people through. But as both Seth and Sue said, they can propel you into positions of power, whether from that place you can build and lead and pass the baton to others on a sustainable, successful path is really the key question. So I think, yes, these exist in clusters, but there are just as many and more examples, as Sue said so well, of clusters of traits that include narcissism and, P.S., include some manipulation, right? Is it, you know, pounds and pounds of manipulation? No. Is a healthy tablespoon administered in certain ways? Every single leader pulls that tablespoon out. You know, from Ernest Shackleton to Martin Luther King to, you know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, every single leader needs to use that at certain times. So I think what we're really talking about here is two things. One, these outliers who get to the top, but not necessarily of something that lasts as a success. And two, what we're also talking about, and Seth's work really brings this, and Sue's column really brings this to the fore, is this increasing attention now in an age when corporations exist in glass houses, mm-hmm. when leaders, right, are held up very, very cynically, and P.S., when more and more creativity and innovation in companies of all shapes and sizes depends on teamwork, we are witnessing greater and greater discernment and interest in what exactly are the kind of habits and drives and psychological profiling that companies want in their workers and in the people they promote to be successful, and what is the right mix. So I think what we're seeing here is really appropriate interest now in what makes people tick and what does that mean for organizational success.
If the world has changed a little bit in its perspective, if we're more aware now, if there's more transparency now, I mean, Sue Schellenberger writes about dark side and silver lining of each of these traits.
Yep.
If you suck these traits out of the American workplace, where does that put us?
We can't suck them all the way out. That's the point, right, of the calls and of what we're saying. Mm-hmm. You can't suck them all the way out. I mean, if Ernest Shackleton had been, you know, completely candid with his, like, team on the ice in 1916 and woken up, stepped out of his tent every morning and said, guys, I'm
boys
really
were doomed.
We're in big trouble, they all would have died. So every single leader learns the value of showing up in service to their mission, which, P.S., may mean some narcissism and may call on some manipulation. It also calls on empathy. So I think we're talking about a matter of nuance and degree in the context of it, what Seuss called a small proportion of people that fuel up and run strictly or mostly on these kind of habits.
Let's go to Alex in Wellesley, Massachusetts. Alex, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, you know, I think if you're looking for this type of narcissistic pattern, you'll find that it's kind of already there. The people that are getting promoted because they're like this are getting promoted into a narcissistic environment already. And people, you know, want to have people that are like them. You know, a truly good to the bone person would stand out and would be at a place there. And, you know, I feel like if you're fighting against all these people, you can't really use narcissistic tools against them. You just have to find your own place to be positive.
And there may be organizations where that's just not going to work. If you're truly good to the bone, that's a pretty high bar. But yes, we love that type of person. I mean, Nancy, thank you, Alex. People are responding along these lines online as well. Here, Charles writes on Twitter, I think people at the top also respect people who aren't always very nice. Charles writes, and another listener writes, Nancy, jerks promoting jerks, kind of Alex's perception.
So think of organizations like families. They're both collectives, and think about how a toxic marriage or, you know, a great trauma to a family will ricochet through the family with lasting impact. Same thing happens to organizations. A lot of the culture and accepted behaviors and attitudes and norms mostly informal, because it's what's informal that matters, never mind what we're saying on our mission statement, right? A lot of that is determined in some sense at the top, and it reverberates throughout. For every single organization that goes bad or sits, you know, atop of which sits, you know, a leader that is mostly about the dark triad that Seth's writing mm-hmm. about, there are seven organizations for which that's not the case. Think about organizations like Starbucks. Think about organizations like IBM. Think about organizations like Procter & Gamble, which have these very carefully nurtured cultures which are based very heavily on how you show up and how you treat others. And that's not just a greeting card, you know, kind mm-hmm. of phrase. These are companies that have psychological profiles around what are your values, what makes you tick, because these are companies that believe they can't succeed unless their people can collaborate and work and play nicely with others.
Kate in Newton, Massachusetts. Kate, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Great topic. Two points. I'd like to hear like what your panel has to say kind of along this line of the bosses that promote these people. Every place I've worked where these individuals implode, and they almost always do eventually, the people at the top that promoted them are almost, they act clueless, like, I can't believe this happened, and this person was so good. And I think that kind of poisons the organization from the top down, because everyone else, as a subordinate, looks at them like, you're an idiot. How did you not see this? And this keeps happening. And then another point, too, that I wanted to make, we keep talking about leaders that are getting to the top and getting promoted and they're brilliant. But I think a lot of this happens just at, like, a mid-level where you've got people that are trying to get promoted, whether they're at the bottom rungs, the middle rungs, all different ages, all different, you know, millennials up to Gen X. And I think that kind of poisons the organization on every level as well, because you've got these people everywhere, not just leaders that are brilliant at the top, that are kind of backstabbing. So I'd like to hear your panel kind of talk about both of those points.
Yeah. Seth, let me bring it first to you. I mean, when you're in the bottom or the middle, it's a scrum. If you want to rise, not everybody will. Or hierarchies aren't entirely flat yet. And Kate, the suggestion in part here that it brings these may bring these traits out in people.
Well, I think part of it is that these are visible traits. People see them, right? The narcissist wants to promote themselves. They want everyone to see and know how great they are. So in a scrum, they're the one who is, you know, close to the top or at the top, showing their head and shoulders. And that's what people above them can see. People below them see, you know, I've talked about how these are people who are nice to you and rude to the waiter. And that's what happens is people below them, their peers can see how nasty they are. The people above them don't necessarily see it unless they can see that interaction that's happening. So I think it's quite possible that that does play out in some organizations, as Nancy pointed out, that there are places that have cultures that wouldn't tolerate that kind of behavior, that would probably have done a good job of not selecting people with these characteristics in, as well as having cultures that reinforce not doing those behaviors.
Sue, there's always sifting. You know, not everybody gets advanced or promoted equally. If these aren't the weapons that come out in that battle, what's the alternative?
Well, one thing we can learn from these people and from Nancy's and Seth's work, I think, is that they manage up very well. And if we are going to, you know, borrow a tool from their portfolio, maybe that's it. It's extremely hard to do. But, you know, while that narcissist is preening and pluming him or herself in front of the bosses, you know, maybe you can make sure that your good work is being shown up as well. Management needs to learn more about this, as Nancy says, to get greater discernment in sort of the psychology of the people that they want to promote. And they need to take a longer-term view. Meanwhile, the rest of us need to make sure that our accomplishments come in front of our bosses as well and that we're telling them how we see things. That's a risk, but it's better than being quiet.
AJ in Boston. AJ, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm in product development. I'm also a business school student, so I'm very much aware of these issues and the benefits of, you know, collaboration and inclusion. But I struggle with the concept of auteurship and, you know, having a singular vision. It just seems like the best and most successful products that I've developed have been those with, you know, fewer people involved and just in my experience, just too many cooks really ruin the stew, so to speak. So I'm just curious to hear what your panelists have to say about that.
I mean, are you suggesting, AJ, that you're kind of one of these dark triad people and
yep.
It works?
That's right.
Nancy, how about it? Hard to let it go. Maybe feels like, look, that's the source of AJ's energy.
Well, you know, okay, AJ, that works for you, right? And you can do the kind of thinking and do the kind of creation and bring those creations into commercializable form. Well, that's working for you. There is a lot of research, more and more and more good research that across different kinds of enterprises, across different kinds of activities, that doesn't just suggest, that demonstrates that more the kind of issues that and products and services that businesses are dealing with in the early 20th century are increasingly the products of integrated group creativity. So there's always room for the sole artist or the sole inventor. That will never go away. But again, organizations are about, you know, making things in scale, including creating environments and people that can do what they need to do in the fast changing, white hot, very competitive world of business in the early 21st century. So I'm sure there's a good role for you. But more and more businesses recognize, and the evidence supports this, that it takes more than one to do this, and that relying on sole inventors, the next Thomas Edison, the next Henry Ford, isn't going to take you very, very far on the battlefield of competition.
AJ, we wish you full enlightenment and success. Allison in Bradford, Pennsylvania. Allison, you're on the air.
Hi, love this topic. I'm in the non-for-profit realm, and I'm seeing these dark triad people be attracted to this type of environment because they have very limited oversight from boards that might meet once or twice, and they look really appealing to these boards because they seem in charge and they can take over.
Yeah.
And then they end up being in charge of all of these people that don't have these kinds of personality traits and kind of get stifled and pushed down.
Those sweet and people who came to the nonprofit sector to get away from that.
Yeah, and I'm seeing a lot of it, and they're moving from nonprofit to nonprofit and building these resumes of nonprofits that they've kind of left in wreckage in their dust.
Allison, we're just going to have to savor the thought of that one and think about it. One more, Tim in Virginia Beach, real quick. Tim, our time is short.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to comment on the previous caller, how he quoted George Bernard Shaw and saying all progress is dependent upon the unreasonable man.
Yes.
I don't think the unreasonable man that Shaw was talking about applies to this dark triad type person. What I think of when I hear George Bernard Shaw's quote is a person like Marconi, who was institutionalized for suggesting that the invisible waves carry sound throughout the air, or a Roger Bannister, who at the time before a sub-4-minute mile had been ran, was certainly unreasonable. Yeah. And a Thomas Edison who, tried his experiment 8,000 plus times before it worked was certainly unreasonable.
Hear, hear.
Tim, we're going to cap it right there. We love your positive take on the unreasonable man with that great vision who's willing to go for it, but not shark style. That's not the point in your telling. Wow, just terrific. Fascinating. It goes right into people's workplaces wherever they are, and we hear the response today. Seth Spain at Binghamton University, thank you so much for your research, Seth.
Thank you for having me today.
Sue Schellenberger at KLCC in Eugene, Oregon. Sue, thanks for joining us again.
I enjoyed it, Tom. Thank you.
And Nancy Kane at Harvard Business School. It is always terrific to hear from you. Thanks for your great insights, Nancy.
A real privilege. Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, good luck to you all in whatever work environment you may have. Be the best that you can be. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.